Let's do the Thrizzle.
Thrizzle Thor?
Yeah, Thrizzle Thor. Thrizzle? I don't know.
Yeah. All right, well, this one is your idea, so...
It was your idea. It was kind of both our ideas. This is... You made me read this. And, I got Tales Designed to Thrizzle, Volume 1, by Michael Kupperman. And I am not mad that David made me read this, but I am kind of mad that he's making me describe it, because there is no way to describe it. It is just batshit insane, and it's a different kind of insane on every single page. Like, every single one. What am I supposed to do here?
Laugh.
There's The Adventures of Snake and Bacon.
Which is one of my favorite parts, like, hands down.
Which is a snake and a piece of bacon who go around and solve mysteries, except they don't really, because they don't do anything.
Yeah, they're there while mysteries exist around them.
Yes. And often are not solved. Okay, the entire book is, I think, designed to be like a tribute to those days when they had comics that had like three different stories and always made up new characters, and then they had those little ads.
Yeah, there's
clearly
quite a few,
drawn
like,
ads.
Ads.
Yeah, do you suffer from hair sea monkeys? I'm wondering what we would do if we actually wrote to these addresses listed. Although I'm pretty sure there's nothing called Smelts, New Jersey.
You'd be surprised. Jersey's a pretty crazy place.
And so they're like little variety shows, like Saturday Night Live in
comic
form.
That's a really good way to put it, actually, yeah.
Except much, much crazier.
And it's been funny in the last 20 years, which is...
Cruel.
Well, 15. I forgot about Chris Farley in those days. Phil Hartman.
I like the occasional, the newscaster skits. Those are okay.
Those are not bad.
Yeah, they have ads like, it's the world famous apiary hat. Apiary is beehive. Maybe I said that too quietly. Apiary is beehive. Okay.
Which is fashionable, but probably pretty painful.
Girls love it. Bears want to stick their paws in it. And on the same page, there's an ad for Side Effects-il, which is just all side effects in a little capsule.
I forgot about that one.
And then it's the start of a cartoon, The League of Appropriated Characters, which is not carried on to the next page. And then there's a three-page thing called Johnny Silhouette, which is just all different silhouettes. Then Johnny describing the silhouettes. A gorilla with a kitten on his head. A juggler dressed as a tree. Then there's this thing called the Love Jumble, which is just a whole bunch of scenes from, like, romance comics, only out of order and with no story. So it, like, starts off with, like, a funny quip. And then there's, like, two people kissing in a car, and then it ends on, like, what a fool I am, how blind and stupid I have been when just someone walking in an alley. I don't, like, what am I supposed to say?
It's, what did you think about the way it was divided into the children's section, old people section, and adult section? Like, did that work for you at all?
It was kind of filthy in both sections, so...
I forget,
like, no actual nudity at any point, but they had this section on...
Foreplay-o.
Yes. The robot that...
It's pretty much exactly what its name sounds like.
Yes.
And I forget if it's in this while you were not, but does Foreplay-o fight any crime? Is that what in there when burglars break in?
No.
Oh, man.
And
well, it's a foreplay robot with several uses.
There's sex blimps and sex holes, which were invented in like the 1920s as the result of Prohibition. Around that 1930s.
Back in the past.
Showing my ignorance, but you know, you would have found out eventually. And so alcohol was legal 15 feet below or above the ground. I don't know why you'd need blimps if it's just 15 feet. That would just be a third story, but...
Blimps are stylish. You've seen Batman the Animated Series.
That's true.
There's police blimps and there's sex blimps, and that's all that was in the sky back then.
And then for the rest of the book, there are just randomly ads for sex blimps and how sex holes were dirty and unsanitary and below sewer pipes. Yes. And then they talked about how another ad later on talked about how sex blimps were boring and crashed, but sex holes had different themes.
And that was the page where there's the one guy in a sewer like, this isn't a sex hole, this is a sewer, or something like that. Like, don't jump down here.
Bottomless pit, not a sex hole.
Yeah.
They had one that's supposed to be getting you through your day. And so it starts out with good morning, with a guy playing a tuba into a boy's face. For some reason. Then it's just a bunch of ads for AM. You know, things you do in the morning. Isn't it time you went to the bathroom, paid for by the bathroom council? Hungry? Why not eat breakfast? And
I think part of the reason why I like this so much is that it's almost ADD humor. Like, if you turn two pages in either direction, and there's completely different kinds of jokes.
Yes.
No, like, what is it, Paganus, the alternate god they had running around throughout the book?
Pagus,
that's right.
Who just went around painting Easter eggs and wanted eggs all the time, and...
It's like a very Adult Swim kind of humor, but it's much more consistent, you know?
I would say...
Fireman Octopus.
Don't read it all in a row, because it'll be like spinning around really, really fast for like a half hour.
I can see that.
It's just every single part. I'm like, how do you even think of this? How does your mind connect one thing? Why is that woman in a bikini with propellers on it? What's going on?
He's gotten away from like the old school, I guess, comics magazine style lately. Mm-hmm. And he's just doing just like vignettes over and over. And hopefully I have the latest one somewhere. Yes. So, hang on. Now with too much color, because they come out in, you know, color now. But Jungle Princess gets like 15 pages of a story. And it's not clear in this volume, but she's actually a jungle princess who runs a women's magazine in the States. And so it's just her...
And she's just got it looks like a leopard skin bikini.
Yeah.
And
she's a jungle girl with a princess hat.
That cone with a veil attached to it hat.
And
which is always associated with princesses, but I have never actually seen in any cartoon anywhere. Like, why is a cone with a veil attached to it a princess hat?
That's actually a really good question, and I don't have a good answer.
But we both know it is.
It's basically a dunce cap.
Yes, but with a little...
Yeah, that makes it... So this isn't a dumb person, this is a princess. You've ruined princesses for all time.
Well, no, because I've never seen a princess wear it.
Yeah.
But it's always there.
Okay. We'll have to write to the queen and ask.
No.
But in this one, she swings to the airport, she gets on the plane, and then she goes to her office, and it's time for the meeting. And it's just all really weird. It's totally a complete story in and of itself, but it flips genres, and there's a bit where she's chasing a guy. and they get on planes and they're chasing each other in the plane. It's just several shots of planes in different directions with captions explaining what's going on. And
there's a guy with a tiger for a head.
Yeah, he dies in a volcano because apparently he forgot there was a volcano on the island. This bit is good when he finds the man he loves embracing another woman, and so she gets her hawk chimp to punch him in the face and steal his clothes, including his wallet. It's a buckshot blast of comedy. And is this the one with Einstein and Twain hanging out?
There was some Einstein and Twain hanging out, only they're both 70s detectives.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing throughout the series, and, like, I would watch that cartoon. Oh, there's this story about how there are thugs trying to make a woman read, and they're promoting literacy, and a guy jumps in to show, you know, he says, "This guy can't be allowed to let people know books are a pile of crap." And basically Einstein and Twain go into space.
Oh, they just passed ad for apiary hats again.
I like how she's really just trying to get away. She's like, "No, bees."
No, I think that's actually a pretty standard pose for romance comics.
Oh, they're reluctant, but totally into it. Yeah.
Also, the face, so you actually see her face rather than just part of it.
But Einstein and Twain go into space for NASA and blow up some asteroids, including with a chainsaw and just like a pistol. But their spaceship is haunted, and it's because the basement is haunted, which has a skeleton chained up. And what is it? NASA got it like on layaway or something. And it's just, it shouldn't hang together as well as it does, because it's clearly just one guy going, "Okay, what'll happen next? I have no idea. I'll just do something." But when Einstein and Twain go, "It's time to bro some ghosts," you're just like, "Yes, I'm ready for this." And this, Grant Morrison said that it's one of his favorite comics. Like, this issue in particular was, like, his favorite book that came out that year.
Kind of explains so much, but I don't know about who.
Yeah. And I picked it up.
And then the last panel is just credits rolling.
Yeah.
What?
And Twain and Einstein keep getting mixed. Like, the characters change. Sort of, like, he's just not keeping track of which one is which. And Cowboy Oscar Wilde. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it really works. And every time I think my friend Chris Eckert put me onto it a couple years ago. He's like, "You gotta read these. They're really funny. They're really weird." And just, like, I picked up one, and I've had to get every one since. And the hardcover. And I watched, there was a pilot that aired on Adult Swim.
And Snake and Bacon?
Yeah. It was pretty funny. It lasted as long as the pilot, but it was pretty funny. It's, like, I feel like there's not enough funny comics.
Yes, it is a very, very funny comic, but
it
I can't describe it.
Yeah. It defies description, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. All right, so something with no narrative. Something with... all narrative. I mean, the Thor, what is it?
Ages of Thunder.
Ages of Thunder. I believe this goes out to
Carla. Basically, it's, I think it was Matt Fraction's first stab at Thor. He's the new ongoing writer as of November, I think.
Is his, that Thor, anything like Ages of Thunder Thor?
I think it's going to build on the same kind of tone, like mythic tone, mm-hmm. But it's not going to be like Blood Colossus for 18 issues.
Is it in continuity?
Yeah, it's like the ongoing Thor series. But this is aside from Ages of Thunder, but it's set like in the current Marvel status quo where Asgard is in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And since Asgard is one of the 9 worlds, like, the other 8 worlds are like, "Holy crap, things are going crazy." So Thor's going on a trip through all the worlds, pretty much going up the world tree and visiting different places. So it sounds pretty good. But Ages of Thunder is the exact I'm not going to say the opposite. It's not bad, but it's it's all about Asgard. And, you know, like, it's much more sword and sorcery than you usually see with Thor a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because Marvel's Thor is, like, it's sci-fi comics 9 times out of 10. Like, he's fighting giants.
And it's
giants.
A little fish out of water comics.
Yeah.
Whereas this is... He has no real contact with the...
No Avengers, none of his friends.
World.
Yeah.
And I think it's done in a different age.
Like, this one, it actually takes place over, like, 30,000 years.
Yeah.
Because they mentioned that...
But all of them pre-World War II, at the very least.
Yeah. Like, it might end around the 1300s, you know?
Yeah.
But it's good because it's... the writing is very mythic, and mm-hmm. like it's almost like someone telling a story. Like you're reading, you know, Marvel's version of Norse myths.
And it's kind of, there's almost no dialogue, is there?
It depends. It's mostly done through the captions.
Yeah.
Like, but it's very much an art showcase.
Yeah.
And like the artists they got, Clay Mann, Patrick Zercher, who really stepped his game up for this, and Kari Evans are fantastic. But it's, like, when I, like, the story's okay for me, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, the art is really what stood out. Because there was a period of about 3 or 4 years where Marvel would, like, one of their artists would just kind of go away. Like, you'd go, oh, okay, Patrick Zercher was doing Cable Deadpool for, like, 20 issues. He hasn't done anything in a year and a half. What's he going to do next? And he comes back, and, like, his art got 50 times as good. And this series has, like, all of those artists on one book. So it looks like nothing they've done, but it's all fantastic, you know? Not that they were bad before. Like, Zercher had this really kind of... He'd be appropriate on, like, a cartoony Robin book, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. And Clay Mann does this sort of realist style, and Kari Evans is super cartoony. But, like, together, they mesh surprisingly well. And part of that's because Jun Chung did all the coloring, or most of the colors. But yeah, this is just, like, hardcore Norse myth done Marvel style. And it's supremely violent. I think in the first chapter, Thor throws his hammer through two different frost giants' heads, and yeah. It's like entrance and exit wound in the same panel. Where is it? Yeah, it's just astounding. And it's fun. This is a kind of Thor story like, you know, you don't see often. He's too busy fighting, you know, like Kang or, you know, some boring normal villain like Mr. Hyde. But this is like Thor versus Frost Giants with a hammer and all of his friends.
And it's a little bit, oh, what are those Norse gods up to now?
Yeah.
Like how they're just all these people with no accountability.
And the only person that's likable is Balder, or not Balder, Heimdall, because he stands and he goes like, hey, somebody's coming. He's the only one that doesn't like completely ruin someone else's life. Because Odin is unbelievable. Thor is... And part of the point is that Thor is a douchebag. And
yes.
Over the course of the series, you see exactly how. Including spending 100 years just killing humans because his dad pissed him off. And Loki is, of course, the god of lies, but he's pretty bad at it at the very beginning. Yeah, it's interesting to read a book where you don't really like anybody.
Yeah.
You feel sorry for a couple. I felt sorry for the Enchantress often.
Well, it is kind of like a myth, so you're not supposed to really like
yeah.
anyone.
Oedipus wasn't exactly a great dude, you know.
And they're not really human. It's
yeah.
kind of the exact opposite of their humanity or their relatability is in their flaws.
Yeah.
Everything about them is not relatable.
Yeah. It's...
So it's just, Loki makes trouble for the Norse gods.
Yeah.
He gets kicked out. That trouble means that Odin does something that pisses off the Enchantress, so 1,000 years later, she does something that pisses off him.
Yeah.
And
it's very violent and kind of super serious, but
yeah.
there are brief moments of comedy.
Yeah.
And it's always like kind of very light, subtle sort of thing. Like, on this page when...
It's just so over the top that you really can't take it
yeah,
seriously.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. When Loki
I'm gonna
is
make
taking...
it rain blood for 100 years.
And all the dead who ever died are gonna rise and fight, so have fun with that.
Yes.
But Loki takes the Enchantress off, and she doesn't know it, but he's basically gonna give her to a Frost Giant to be the Frost Giant's wife in exchange for something I forget now. And he's like, no need to worry, mighty Heimdall. And the caption goes, called Loki out to the bridge keeper of Asgard, so it's not to raise suspicion. Fair Idun and I are merely going for a lovely stroll. Nothing underhanded or suspicious about it at all. And it's kind of a Loki that we never see anymore. Because this Loki's inept. Like, he really sucks as a god of lies. Like, he is at best, like, maybe a demigod.
This is like the 38,000 years he had to practice.
Yeah. And even the caption goes, back then, Loki could always be trusted to oversell his case. It's, like, if there weren't these brief moments of kind of ha-ha, it would be a really kind of draining book to read. Just because it's fighting and then just hardcore violence and then more fighting. And then, by the way, Dad, I hate you so much. But
yeah, and Thor is not likable.
At all.
Yes. And this is the tale of how, at first, everyone's just like, oh, that's Thor.
Yeah. then, he sure is a good fighter, you know.
11,000 years later, so like, Thor's really being a jerk.
Yeah.
And 5,000 years after that, Odin is just like, oh, this is really getting to me now. 10,000 years after that, he's at last just like, that's it.
We're fighting.
And it's, I think, the origin of Thor was that he was cast out of heaven.
Yeah.
Right? Or
he was too... Valhalla. Well, it's basically the exact same as this, where he wasn't nice enough. And
yeah.
Made Odin mad.
And
so he's
going to
teach him humility.
That's it. You're going down to Earth until you learn. And don't come back until you have.
What I like about this is that it took some thinking after I finished, but since there's several Ragnaroks, and when Thor is cast out of Valhalla, or cast out of Asgard to Earth, it's in, like, you know, the 1300s or whenever. So it's happened several times over the course of his life. So, like, theoretically, all these might not follow in order, even though they do, but Thor could have been cast out in every single Ragnarok that happened. Which means that he is, like, the hardest of hard heads, you know? But this is a fun, it's a really fun trip through, like, Marvel's Asgardian place. And when Valkyrie shows up at the end, or Brunhild, because she's not called Valkyrie at that point, that was kind of like an awesome moment, because she's a really fun character.
No man could best us in battle or in bed.
And when later she's thinking, you know, I'm not going to seduce or subdue this petulant whelp, I will shatter him. Like, that is great writing.
Yeah.
But have you ever read any stories with Valkyrie?
No.
I don't know if I can find the cover I'm thinking of, but when she came out in the 70s, she was kind of a straw feminist, but in, like, a really funny way. And one of my favorite Marvel covers is, like, her, Thundra, and a few other people called the Lady Liberators. Ah, man.
Oh, subtle.
Yeah,
so... Finger on the pulse there.
What was it in? Defenders? Hold on, I'm going to look for this until I find it, because it is a fantastic cover.
We'll all just sit here quietly until it does.
Just pause, and by the time you unpause, I will have found it. Oh, man. But it's like, you know, we're going to show these chauvinist pigs what's what. And it's just like all the buff Marvel girls standing on, like, just bodies of Marvel heroes. I feel like it was in the Defenders.
So it's kind of a well-meaning attempt to be like, feminism.
Like, with a wink at the camera, I think.
Yeah.
And even recently she was in Avengers Academy. Which is a book I was on the fence on, but the latest issue was really good.
Oh, yeah, didn't...
She was supposed to train
them. I saw that on Scans Daily, and she just, like, got all
like
the younger heroines a beer and were just like, you know, you can't rely on men, so... Or some warriors use chastity as a way to clear their minds, but you're too hormonal, and that's completely natural. You
Luckily,
can't rely
mortal
on men.
Craftsmen have invented, and then the teachers come in, they're like, what are you doing? She's like, you know, I'm teaching them. But, like, you're supposed to teach them to fight. And she's like, yes, I'm teaching them to fight the phallocentric manocracy. Like, that is really her character, like, what's wonderful about her in one single scene.
And we really should all use phallocentric menocracy. Forget patriarchy. Just always that from now on.
I think I stole that
from
Futurama.
I want that to be on some congressional record somewhere.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I stole it from Futurama, but it's such a great phrase that, like, why would you not use it every chance you got? Aha, I finally found it. And watch it be, like, super tiny. Yes, of course. But anyway, it's Avengers 83. It wasn't the Defenders. But it's guest starring Black Widow and the Magnificent Medusa, whose hair is prehensile, and she's pretty awesome, too. And Valkyrie's going, all right, girls, that finishes off these male chauvinist pigs. From now on, it's Valkyrie and her lady liberators. And she's just standing on Giant Man's head. And, and what is that? Black Panther, Quicksilver, the Vision, who is a robot, who I don't think even counts as a dude. I guess he did marry Scarlet Witch. But, like, it's just perfect. John Buscema art. She's got this big smile on her face. And, like, she could easily
just
be...
just like, whee!
Yeah. Like, I really think that if people started writing Wonder Woman as Valkyrie, maybe toned down just a little bit from, like, the ha-ha, I am woman, look at me roar, and smash her head in with this hammer, she would be, like, so much more interesting. But that's Valkyrie. And in this, like, she's really just a hardcore warrior woman, and it works. In Ages of Thunder, since there was a digression, and maybe you forgot what we were talking about. But, yeah. Can you tell that I like Valkyrie? Like, I don't know. But this is... what was going on in Thor during this point? I think that JMS had started his run, where it was, like, Thor in Oklahoma talking to, you know, like, poor people and normal people. Which, you know, okay, there's a time and a place for that, but it wasn't that interesting to me, you know?
I've seen occasional bits of him in Oklahoma,
yeah,
which I kind of like, where a mailman just comes up and sets up a mailbox, yeah, and puts a little invitation to, like, a community...
yeah, like a potluck.
Park. Yes.
Yeah.
And then puts up the flag on the mailbox and keeps going, and then you see from out of nowhere Thor appear and just take it out and look at it.
Yeah. Like, it's the sort of setting that
just like checking his mail in full armor.
It should have been, like, I know a lot of people like it a lot, but it felt, I mean, it was JMS, who I'm not too fond of these days. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit too preachy and, like, self-important in a way. Thor goes and finds all, like, the Asgardians had been reincarnated as humans. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So Thor is going around reawakening them. So they're like, there's the war in Africa issue. There's the Hurricane Katrina issue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You can see where this is going. And it's just, like, heavy-handed, like, we are important and we are gods and blah, 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 blah. And by the way, Iron Man, you're a jerk. You know, and it's just... it didn't
well,
work
Iron
for
Man
me.
Is a jerk, but...
true.
I think that mailbox thing was only lately, right?
It was afterwards? Probably towards the... it was after JMS got all the, like, here are the Norse gods in various topical places, you know, out of the system. But yeah, it was used in Siege. I think Asgard fell in Siege. Mm-hmm. See, actually...
so, are they still in Oklahoma, or are they
gone? They're still in Oklahoma. They're still floating above Broxton, I think is the name, or Brixton, one of the two.
See, I think I could like that. Just them going around Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Being random Norse gods.
Fighting whatever supervillains hang out in Oklahoma. You know, the Dust Devil or something. But I just realized that I think after Matt Fraction did these... no, actually, yeah, probably just after. He did the Secret Invasion Thor tie-in, which was similar in tone, but not... it wasn't, like, mythical, but it was the same kind of, like, hard-hitting heavy metal action. Mm-hmm. Where it was just, like...
where you could see it painted on the side of a van.
Yeah. Like, absolutely. Because it was Thor and Beta Ray Bill, who is already pretty much, like, the ultimate heavy metal superhero, I think. Because he's a horse with a giant hammer and a cape. Like, I don't know. But it was them versus space aliens, who were, like, other gods at the same time.
They were Skrull taking those gods. Forms.
Yeah.
I remember Secret Invasion.
And it's just, like, three solid issues of people getting hit in the face with hammers. And it was very entertaining. And I think that's what's fun about this, is that it's super violent. And not really in an off-putting way. Like, it's not... it's very visceral, but it's not very realistic.
Yeah. There's no pathos and misery.
Yeah, no one looks like their severed arm and gone,
no!
You know. War is hell.
Yeah.
It's not Apocalypse it's Now, like, it's just Apocalypse.
They're frost giants. Kill the frost giants.
And it's built around, like, a series of really great, I guess, fight scenes, like Odin in the Destroyer armor versus Thor. And Odin's doing a whole lot of talking, and, like, the caption goes, like, Thor can't think of words to express the loathing he feels for his father, and then two come to him, and those words are shut up. It's just a really fun, really violent comic in a way that a lot of comics aren't violent these days. Well, a lot of good comics aren't violent these days. Because I can hear you about to say Rise of Arsenal.
But, again, yeah. But it's not the same. Like, it's not about people being miserable or, yeah, like, the most gory, awful thing. It's just adventure. Yeah. Like, old-timey adventure stuff.
It's guilt-free violence, I think, yes, is the best way to put it.
I enjoy that.
Yeah. There was a recent Thor one-shot, I think end of July. It's called, like, God of Rage or something like that. Rage of Thor. And it was written by Peter Milligan. It's usually pretty good. And pretty much, Thor and Odin have another fight. And Thor's like, forget you guys, I'm leaving. And he goes and lives as a human for a while. And so, of course, like, he protects, like, his new little village from marauders, because, you know, berserkers come through or something. And he finds a wife, and he gets a stepson, and they have a very happy life. Then he has to come back to Asgard to fight someone. And he's fighting Surtur, the fire demon. And last time, Surtur, like, he needed the help of Odin. It was Odin and Thor versus this guy, and they barely beat him. Mm-hmm. But this time, it's Thor, his love for his wife, and his rage against Odin. And he takes him down single-handedly. But, of course, because there are no happy endings, when he finally gets back to his village...
Let's just leave it.
I'll say the end of the story, he comes back to Asgard.
He's very happy he gets a puppy.
There is... Yes, exactly what you said is exactly what happened.
Thank you.
But it was a good... It was another, like, super violent story where you don't really feel bad about the violence. Because it was either warranted, like the guy totally had it coming, or, you know, it wasn't about, like, how terrible it is to fight things.
Yeah.
There was no criticism of the violence, like, in the story, which sometimes happens.
Yeah, or consequences.
Yeah.
You read comics to get out of consequences.
Unless the consequences are really entertaining.
Then it's okay.
Yeah. But, oh, wow. So, do you have anything to add to Tales Designed to Thrizzle and Thor? Tales Designed to Thorzle?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
I couldn't describe it the first time. I can't describe it now.
But I think you should definitely read both comics. Yes. Just because these are really entertaining.
Take a look.
In completely opposite ways. Yes, 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. No stopping.